Yo, everyone, welcome to another episode of Optimize Your Body podcast. I've got another amazing, amazing guest here today, and it's an absolute honor to have him on. I found you through Mind Pump, Brian.
That's right. Yeah, those guys are great up there in Northern California.
That's right. That's right. Because you were on there recently, right?
Yeah, just about, I don't know, it must have been about a month ago or so. Got hooked up with those guys and went out, visited their studio and had a great day with them.
Awesome. Awesome. So I'm going to get straight into the introduction here, Brian. Coach Kula has, if pronounce your surname right there, it is Kula.
That's right. Yep. You got it right.
Kula. Yeah. Okay. I want to make sure I'm not messing that up. Yep. Coach Kula, he's worked with thousands of athletes in his career as a track and field sports performance and football coach. He's actually got 28 years. I mean, it's probably more than that now, right? 28 years on your website experience. We're gonna round it off to almost three decades. That sounds better. Yep. Almost three decades experience in the athletic development of athletes at all levels, from youth to professional. He's been certified as a strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. We'll be here all day if I list off all his qualifications and accolades, right? But he's worked with all-stars, should I say. And of course, this name you must be hearing so many times every single day, NFL star Christian McCaffrey, who plays for the San Francisco 49ers. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's right.
Incredible. Incredible. But yeah, he's worked with Olympians and so on. His passion to success for the development of athletes to maximize their potential has been recognized at the state, regional, and national level. And as an athlete himself, Kula was an accomplished decathlete at the University of Northern Colorado, earning All-American honors and played wide receiver for the football team. So, and just to add on to that, he was inducted into the UNC Hall of Fame class of 2014. Man, I was reading that out to myself before the thing, and I was like, that is a dope intro. Just to read that off your website, you know what I'm saying? I said, that's a lot, my man. Good work.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. I don't love all that stuff, you know, to be read and whatnot, but yeah, it's often fun to reflect on.
I'm the same as man. It's funny because I'm like, I'm going to do it because I know he'll play it down if I ask him, because that's what happens sometimes. I'll ask the guest and they'll be like, yeah, you know, I've just, you know, coached people for a couple of years. You know what I mean? To play it right now. But it's funny because it's super awkward, right? Because when I go on podcasts, people start reading it out and I'm like blushing and stuff. You know what I mean? Like, this is
right.
Just awkward.
That's right.
Awesome, dude. What part of America are you from, Brian?
I live in Denver, Colorado. We live in Castle Pines, which is like a suburb of Denver on the south end. I've lived here for about 20 years.
Beautiful. I've always wanted to go to, it's obviously in Colorado, right? Just to clarify, right. Denver.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to Colorado. It looks absolutely beautiful, man.
Yeah, we're blessed, man. We have like the best of all the worlds, right? We got great mountains for skiing and snow and fun winter stuff, but then the summertime in Colorado is beautiful. We're kind of in that high arid desert, so we don't get too much humidity and high altitude living. You know, it can be tough at times, but I think it's great for fitness and things like that. So it's a wonderful place to live.
Absolutely incredible. I bet it's cold this time of year though, my man, right?
Yeah. In fact, it's 68 degrees outside right now here. So it's unseasonably warm today, but that's how Denver is. It's kind of schizophrenic. You know, it'll be cold, and then we'll get a couple days of sunshine. And so one thing we get here is we get sunshine. So even if it's, you know, cold, we get the heat of the sun and makes it tolerable.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, I love that weather. That's because I live in Australia, but I'm from Wales in the UK.
Okay.
And yeah. I actually like the weather here in the winter when it's like sunny but cold. You know what I mean? I kind of like that.
That's right. Yeah. You were born and raised in that gloom of the gray skies.
100%. That's exactly what it is, man. It's gray skies nonstop in the UK. Have you been to the UK, Brian?
I've just flown through. We're actually headed there this summer, right before the Olympic Games. We're going to spend a few days there.
Nice, nice. The Olympic Games, they're in France, right?
That's right. Yeah, I got a little gal that I worked with, Anna Hall, who is an accomplished heptathlete, and I coached her in high school. And so she would be a medal favorite for the Games in Paris. So we're gonna shoot over and support her.
That's awesome, man. That must be such a good feeling, though, man, to have coached someone from a young age like that, yeah, and then have them in the Olympics, man. That's incredible.
It's unbelievable, right? And that's why you got to take the opportunity to go, you know, take it all in, because, you know, I knew her when she was a sophomore in high school, still learning all the different events, and, you know, always knew she had kind of the tenacity to be amazing. but you never really know how far someone's going to go. And now she's one of the best athletes in the world. So just, you know, great kid, and can't wait to go watch her compete.
That's going to be absolutely phenomenal. Sorry, what does she specialize in? Sorry, you said the
she's a heptathlete. So she's the female version of a decathlete, and they run 7 track and field events over 2 days. Some people call them the greatest athlete in the world because they're so accomplished in different disciplines in track and field. So, she's very good in, you know, several of the events, still developing some of the others, which is scary because she's very good already.
She's going to be, it sounds like she's going to be an absolute weapon going forward, man.
She was the silver medalist in Budapest in the World Championships this last year. And actually did that on a little bit of a banged up knee.
And the funny thing is, I bet she was fuming that she didn't get the gold, right? That's the funny thing. Oh. They get to that level where they expect so much of themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fortunately or unfortunately, I've been exposed to a few of those athletes that are just so competitive that, you know, it just wrecks them when they don't, you know, reach their goals. So, but she's awesome. You know, all of them kind of recalibrate and get pointed towards the next goal.
I love what you mentioned there. I do want to touch on that mindset of that level of high performance, right? I really want to talk about the high performance stuff. But before we get into that, I'd love to know, Bright, what got you in, what kind of, I don't know if inspired you is the right word, but how did you end up coaching athletes? I actually did the UKSCA qualification back in the UK. I got really fascinated with it, but I never followed through in terms of, I was just coaching, you know, gen population, but it was something that really fascinated me. And I'd love to know how you got into all that.
Sure. Yeah, no, it was the family business. So my grandfather was a coach. He was a football coach and a track and field guy, and almost an innovator at some level with some physical human performance stuff back in the 50s and 60s. And then my dad was a coach, fell into the exact same thing, coaching track and field and football. He coached basketball and golf and was a weight training coach for a bunch of years and was kind of part of the initial movement of the NSCA. And I just kind of grew up in a gym. I grew up in, you know, on fields and around athletes and around coaches. And I'm not sure if I had much of a choice to do other than what I went into. And so I went off to college and studied kinesiology and got a teaching job out of there and ended up, you know, coaching weight training for about 14 years. And I really used that as my laboratory, you know, with live athletes and trying different things to try to develop, you know, kids in different sports, and landed, you know, here we are so many years later of all that experience and exposure, you know, coming into full fruition of a sports performance coach.
Awesome, man. That's awesome. That's so interesting that it was a family business, right? To be kind of born into that, just that mindset as well, right? It's so valuable for your life, isn't it? To be kind of brought up essentially by coaches and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it's a looking back, it was a total blessing. You know, I'm not sure if in the moment I always thought it was a blessing, right? I mean, you know, I had my dad was pretty hard on me as an athlete and, you know, demanding, and, you know, at the time I'm not sure if I thought it was going to be something that would change my life. But, you know, all these years later, I can see how valuable that was to me to be able to, you know, step in and take on the roles that I took on as a coach and teacher throughout the years.
I'd love to touch on that, Brian. I'm glad if you're happy to talk about it, I'm glad you mentioned that, right? Because it's like at the time, as you say, and it could go the other way as well, right? I've seen it go the other way. A lot of times, like one of my friends was a world champion karate guy back home, and his dad pushed him to the extreme to where they just fell out. They no longer have a relationship. You know what I mean? So I've seen it go the other way. But with yourself, obviously, that then has got you to where you're at. So it's like being hard on you, that discipline which has been ingrained into you, and almost like, you know, it's never enough, right? I'm sure your dad was like, okay, yeah, you did great today, but we want to get to that next level. But it also served you as an athlete, right? Because you competed, you know, at a high level, you know, well, you played at a pretty good level from what I saw, football. And also, was it decathlete, was it?
Yep. Yeah, track and field was probably my primary sport. I dabbled in all the sports in high school. I played basketball and football and ran track and played a little baseball and soccer when I was younger. So I got exposed to a lot of sports, which kind of was a non-negotiable in my household. You know, you got out and you tried all those different sports. But yeah, I mean, he pushed me hard and, you know, their expectations were always high. They were a very loving family. It's not like it was contentious ever, you know, but I think it just, it gave you the mindset of, you know, a bar of excellence, and you do things a certain way. And, you know, you train hard, you practice hard, first one in, last one out, you know, kind of a mentality, is really where we, you know, that's just how we were raised. So
I'd love to know the difference, like how you've climbed the ladder. You know, you coach a variety of different people. And I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what's kind of the difference? Okay, the likes of like Christian McCaffrey, right? Who you're coaching now, the NFL star. The different, I can only imagine the difference in like the bandwidth and the preparation and everything else that goes into that. And there's still a lot that goes into, you know, maybe coaching kids or coaching people who are at a lower level. But I'd love to know the difference, the contrast in that.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, first of all, I'd say like I wasn't ready to coach a Christian McCaffrey or a, you know, Anna Hall or Jane, you know, Janine Becky for many, many years. You know, that takes a long time to be prepared and ready to coach athletes that are that focused and that, you know, have those abilities. So I just think that was a, you know, those are culminations of a lot of years of making mistakes and doing things wrong and, you know, learning from them and growing and researching and all the things that you do to grow as a professional. But, you know, at the end of the day too, it's not that they're so dissimilar. You know, there are some similarities between training a youth athlete and training a professional athlete where there are still components to, you know, presenting stimulus and trying to get adaptation. It's, you know, obviously variations in intensity and load and volume and all those kind of things. And there are certain things that, you know, are too complex for a young athlete. So there is simplicity to complex, you know, over time, but, you know, you work with some young athletes sometimes that are extremely talented and you can throw them a little bit more. So it's not like it's, you know, night and day difference. There's just, you know, slight variations.
That's awesome. But let's get into some of the training concepts, right? Because I feel like a lot of the stuff that you coach, it depends on the level of the athlete and everything else, but a lot of the stuff you talk about and you present and all the skill that you have with coaching in terms of like speed training, for example, right?
Yep.
Speed training, how that translates into strength. Because I always talk to my audience, to my clients about, you know, obviously the importance of strength training for longevity and health and everything else. But obviously a lot of people want to improve. And again, with athletes, this is not important. The aesthetics really doesn't matter. It's about performance. But they kind of go hand in hand. And I love some of the stuff that you're putting out there and how you coach your clients with the speed training and stuff. Because when I used to coach people in person, I would get them doing some of that stuff, you know, explosive work. And it's actually made me think I need to get back into doing a phase of that as well. So what I'm trying to ask you is the value of speed training and how you would kind of explain that to the audience and how that kind of translates to improve strength. Because it really does, doesn't it?
If sure.
You do it appropriately, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've built an entire business around the idea of speed being the primary, you know, KPI for performance training. We feel like it's, you know, if you told us you got one tool to train an athlete, we're going to sprint. We're going to make sure that the athlete gets faster and that we stimulate the central nervous system. I think it's something that helps move a lot of different, components of athleticism. Just by getting faster, you know, change of direction and vertical jump and strength levels, power levels, force output, all those things change positively, I think, when an athlete gets faster. So we kind of built our system, if you want to call it, or our you know, emphasis around making athletes faster.
And how does that benefit, like for the average person, right? If they were to focus on at least going for a period of time where they're focusing on getting faster, and doing maybe more explosive movements, you know, whether they're using bands or those kind of things or whatever they're doing, and also sprints and those kind of things. How do you think that would kind of, because it would benefit anyone, right? Because it's fast twitch muscle fibers and everything else, right? So yep. I'd love to know how you think, what the benefit that is, you know, for athletes and just for people in general to kind of incorporate some of that type of training into their regime.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, I do think it's for everybody. And I, you know, I think obviously there's certain circumstances where you wouldn't want somebody, you know, full on sprinting if they're not fully ready to do so. I mean, there's kind of a readiness program into making sure somebody's ready to sprint so there's not an injury. I mean, Lord only knows you wouldn't want to see me sprint anymore. You know, I'm broken in 7 different places and, you know, that'd be a 911 call waiting to happen. But you know, and there's different ways to increase and recruit fast twitch and stimulate the central nervous system without necessarily sprinting. But I think an element of high output and, you know, kind of reaching for that 98, 99, 100 percentile of work is something that we get away from when we get out of sports. You know, we do that in sport at some level, the coach or the athlete, you know, because they're in it and they need to be faster. But we lose track of that's a really good thing for us. for our energy systems to be complete and almost train like an athlete, even in older age. And so, you know, again, within reason, we would want everybody to maintain a level of speed development within their systematic approach to training. So, you know, I think a lot of people are just scared of it. They don't understand it very well. And they think it's like, well, I got to get on a, you know, an overspeed treadmill and run as fast as I can or whatever. And, you know, they pull a hamstring, they get injured. And so it kind of develops a bad rap. And there's, you know, that's why it's important that we provide programming around that to people so they can follow a, you know, an appropriate assimilation to speed.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head there, man, didn't you, in terms of the skill required. It blows my mind because people, when they run or they sprint, even like, you know, think about it, most people run when they do cardio, for example. They run just to get tired, right? They just run cardio, going to go on a long distance run or whatever. But even when people sprint, it's not something you just do. It's a tremendous amount of skill involved. I've seen the stuff you do, even if it's not, you know, like high level athletes, it's a lot of skill, right? To sprint efficiently. Right.
Yeah. Sprinting really has a lot of coordinative abilities that take place where, you know, so through drilling and through a lot of practice and, you know, thousands to millions of ground contacts of preparing the body to be able to sprint is not taken lightly, you know, and younger kids, it's a little easier to get them sprinting because they're so mobile, you know, they're mobile and they're flexible and their tendons and ligaments haven't fully developed and stuff. So it's kind of easy with them, but with a high level athlete, you have to be really careful. And then especially once you haven't been training that way for a certain period of time, you know, we know that the central nervous system has about a 3 to 8 day window where it'll start to detrain. And so, you know, it takes some consistency. It's not something where you would just want to, hey, I'm going to go to the park today and run some sprints and I haven't sprinted in 6 months. You're probably set up for an injury and you're not really even looking at development. So it definitely takes a level of development and consistency in your regimen.
And that's why it's so good, right? That, you know, doing it from a young age. I think people like me and you, in a sense, we're kind of lucky, right? Because we've always been, you know, like athletes or playing sports and active and everything else. And when you do that for a young age, you take it for granted in terms of how that shapes you, right? Because you naturally develop kind of like better skills and everything else. And you become more, as it going into adult life then, you've already got a good level of connection with your body and stuff, so to speak, right?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, you always say that we can make some mistakes with young athletes, right? They're very resilient. They, you know, they rebound, they recover faster than, you know, and then you get into high level athletes and their output levels are so high that it takes very calculated recovery, regeneration training to be able to repeat that process in 48 hours, 72 hours, whatever the time frame is for your programming. You know, where little kids, they could probably line up and sprint every single day and they'd be okay to a certain level because their outputs are lower and their bodies are a little bit more resilient.
What would you say for like the average person who's listening to this? Most people will have a decent level of fitness and a decent amount of experience with lifting weights. And they might be thinking, yeah, I do need to switch it up and actually focus more on those kind of mechanics, on you know, speed and potentially developing more strength in that realm. You mentioned earlier, you need a foundational level, right? What would you say like people need, the fundamentals people need to focus on first, you know, whether that be balance, stability, to actually build up to doing that efficiently, if that makes sense, the speed stuff?
Yeah, I think, you know, what we do really with any athlete that walks through the door, and that would be an adult or a, you know, gen pop, whatever, we would start them with a readiness, you know, programming of making sure that from the foot, which is where we always start our teaching, is from the foot all the way up the kinetic chain. There's a lot of poor ground strike mechanics that take place with most people when they run. And so there's an education process of how it's supposed to strike and, you know, maximizing the force output. And so we'd have to take them through that. That process before we'd want to turn them loose to actually sprint. And so they'd have to build the resiliency in their ankle complex and their hips, their knees and everything to be able to withstand the demands of sprinting. And so, you know, adding in some plyometric work, adding in, you know, some of the drill sequencing and some of the mock drills and things that you do as a sprinter to be able to hit the right positions and start to formulate what looks like good running, then you can start to cut it loose, you know, to run a little bit faster. And it would just be kind of more of that linear periodization at some level of, we're going to start with some slower running and build tolerance and then, you know, progress into, you know, higher speeds and longer distances and things like that. So it's not too dissimilar from even the weight room, you know, where somebody, you know, isn't going to go in and throw 300 pounds on the squat bar and just start squatting, you know, three sets of 10. And, you know, you're going to take a progression. You're going to regress the exercise and get the right amount of weight, find the right proper form and mechanics, and then build your way up to, you know, a triple or a double set, you know, where your performance is really high. So it's really not that much different in sprinting. But I think sometimes because there's not a lot of apparatus or modalities that are involved with sprinting, people think they can just go sprint. But you really almost have to regress it back all the way to, you know, how does the foot strike in the ground? Where does my recovery, you know, mechanics happen? What are my arms doing? What's, you know, how do I coordinate all of this? And so that's a really long-winded answer to a short question, but, you know, we wouldn't tell you just to come in and sprint. We would take you through a sequencing, a process of how to, you know, sprint a little better. Then we can start talking about moving the needle on central nervous system and fast twitch recruitment.
Yeah, that's it. It's so hard to answer on a podcast, right? When you're coaching people, because it's like, it's a lot to it. It's actually quite, I think people should look at it that way. I always say, you know, like you've got to treat it like a skill when you go into the gym, just like you would anything else, right, Brian? It's like, you know, you wouldn't just go and play tennis, for example, against a pro and expect to do well. You'd have to practice first, get your skills up a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
I think it's exactly the same sort of thing when it comes to weight training. Yeah, yeah, 100%. So you mentioned, oh, no, let's talk on that, right, with the skill and everything else. Do you think that's a good message to get, to, again, even the average person who goes in to lift weights, right? I want to improve the way my body looks and get stronger. Do you think there's so much value that most of the value is going to come from and getting your bang for your buck is going to come from actually getting good at the mechanics of each of those kind of compound movements rather than going in like everyone looks at training like a workout, right? I'm going to go in and work out. I guess it's the same as running. I'm going to run to get tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that's a space that we try to live in. We try to be a high performance environment. And, you know, sometimes there's a disconnect because people think if I'm not dog tired or sweating or falling over that I didn't get a good workout. And for us, we often don't have that. I mean, we get, you know, we'll have a kid get sick because they've never experienced that level of high performance. And so that kind of creates a reaction in their body that they're not used to, but it's not because we pushed to the point of fatigue, you know, where their body is, you know, rejecting or producing a ton of lactic acid that's, you know, poisoning their body. We try to avoid that at some level, which again is counterintuitive to some people that think fitness is all about, you know, the grind and hurting. And I mean, we don't want athletes in general to hurt. And in fact, I think our bodies are really, really good indication of, have I done too much? You know, the pain factor, I don't know that we were in high performance anyway. We're meant to push past the point of pain. That's our body telling us that it's done. You know, we need to stop and start over again tomorrow. Is a little bit of how we look at just fatigue in general.
Yeah, yeah, love that, love that. And I think that's such a big problem for a lot of people. And with fitness and everything else, people see online nowadays, it's like, no days off and get after it. And I've got to push myself because I have this battle with some of my clients. It's like, oh, you know, I didn't really feel like it was, you know, that challenging. And I'm like, okay, well, remember what the intention is. I think people need to know the intention of what you were doing. And you mentioned, I always struggle to pronounce this word, periodization. Isn't it? Is it periodization?
Yeah, yeah, periodization.
Periodization, that's right, periodization.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, just like, for example, some people, they'll go in and let's say we've got them focusing on getting stronger and doing maybe a lower rep range. And they're like, you know, I didn't get a pump, I didn't sweat. And it's like, great, that's not the point. The point is to get stronger. You know what I mean? How important do you think that is, man? The intention and periodization in terms of most people don't do that. They don't even implement periodization. They just kind of, a lot of people either A, just doing freestyle workouts, or B, they're just doing a bunch of random workouts. You know what I mean? There's not structure to what they're doing with their programming, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. For us, that's like the most important thing to us. You know, I'll give you an example. If we're going to run like a max velocity day, we might have an athlete run 2 reps of a fly 10, you know, fly 10 yards. And oftentimes they'll get frustrated. They want to run a third or a fourth or a fifth rep. And what they don't understand is after 2 reps, even with maximal recovery, their central nervous system is going to experience some fatigue at that high level output. And so their third, fourth, and fifth reps are not going to hit the high performance level that we want them to hit. And so, you know, they get frustrated. They want more. But we put very strict parameters around, you know, we're going to live in high performance. And once we're out of high performance, we're going to shut it down. There are times in training, you know, in the periodization for energy system development, where we can work on lactic threshold and aerobic capacity and, you know, some of the different things that athletes need in different sport environments. Or if somebody's just trying to get generally fit, you know, you probably can't just do speed work, you know, but it's a component that can, I guess, more make a more well-rounded athlete or a more well-rounded person. And so, but when we are focused on speed, it's going to be, you know, very calculated, and it's going to be minimal dosage. We don't want to overdo it. We don't want to, as some people say, we don't want to, you know, overcook the steak. Tony Holler, my buddy in Chicago, he would say, don't burn the steak.
Yeah, I like that. I like that analogy. Because there's this awareness thing is I talk about to clients is the triangle of awareness. Not sure if you've heard of that.
Yep.
Yes. Yeah. With the performance on what you got a triangle, obviously you've got performance on one corner, aesthetics on one, and then longevity on the other.
That's right.
I'd love to know your thoughts on that in terms of like the difference in, because a lot of people, they want to improve the way their body looks, but then they want to have their cake and eat it too. And it's like, sure. Yeah, but I want to run a marathon as well. And it's like, you can't have it all. You can have it all. Sorry, but you can't have it all at the same time, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? You can have a balance, but you're never going to get like to the level you want to get to aesthetically and maintaining, you know, like a top level of cardiovascular, you know, fitness, for example, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think you alluded to it earlier when we were talking of, you know, what are your goals? What are you trying to achieve? And what is your intent? And oftentimes, you know, like I do deal with athletes sometimes that, you know, especially young male athletes that want to get bigger. They want to get, you know, more muscly. And sometimes that doesn't go in line with high performance. You know, the more weight you put on, the harder it is to run fast, because there's a force index there of, you know, how strong are you compared to your body mass. And sometimes additional muscle can be helpful, but then there's a point of diminishing returns where you're going to just be carrying more of a load. And so it becomes harder. And so you always have to go to that athlete and say, what is your intent? What is your goal? If you want to look like a bodybuilder, we can tilt that way. I know how to do that, but I'm not sure it's going to help you much, you know, run fast, make tackles, score goals, you know, whatever your intent is. So I think that's the point of that, you know, that pyramid is figuring out, you know, which one's the high priority, which one's secondary, and which one is, you know, the least prioritized. And then you attack the one that, you know, is most important. For us, that would be performance. We don't care about aesthetics that much. You know, we'll throw in a swole patrol or a fat arm Friday here and there, but you know, that's not our main
goal. Swole patrol, I haven't done before. I love that one. That's great quality. No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's like, you know, the athletes at that level, again, I'm just going to go back to Christian McCaffrey again. Like, he cares less about having shredded abs. He wants to win, and he wants to do the best he can do on the field, right? Like,
that's exactly right. And, you know, and sometimes, I mean, I think that's why it's in a triangle, right? Because there's crossover amongst all of them. And, you know, as Christian works very hard at his craft and in training and in diet nutrition and all the things, he ends up with a, you know, aesthetically he is, you know, where he would probably want to be anyway. I don't know that you can get too far away from any one of those things, but so there's definite crossover, but where your intent is focused is where you're going
to
land.
100%. It's so interesting, right? Because we look up to these athletes, man, because they're absolute, like, they put their whole life into it, right? They literally put everything into it. Like the girl you've been coaching from a young age, sorry, what was her name again? Shout her out, the one who's going to compete in the Olympics. What was her name?
Oh, Anna Hall. That's right. Yeah, Anna Hall. Yeah, they live it. Absolutely live it.
They live it. And people look up to them and they see the end result. They see her, for example, even last year, right in Budapest, got the silver medal. Wow, that's amazing. They do not see what's going on behind the scenes. And they also then realize, going back to the triangle, you know, when it comes to longevity, it's not necessarily, it's definitely not good at that level, right? They're not thinking about necessarily living longer. They're thinking about, I got to perform and put my body through quite a lot to get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, athletes have a really short window of time when you think about it. You know, I mean, even if, you know, an NFL guy plays for 10, 12 years, that's a really long career. You know, in track and field, it can be even shorter than that. You know, you have once every 4 years, you get to go to the Olympic Games, you know, and you got to qualify out of your country and be top three in your event to go once every 4 years and, you know, on the world stage. So, you know, the pressures, the demands, the, you know, there is no longevity. at some level, you have to perform, and you have to perform when it's time to perform. So yeah, it's incredible how they are able to focus in on, you know, again, like we talked about, that performance piece.
So no, I was just going to say, in terms of the mindset behind that, I'd love to tap deeper into that, because I know a lot of people can relate to this in terms of that perfectionism thing. I'm sure you can as well, right? Because from a young age, athlete and everything else, obviously your father was quite hard on you, which has paid off. But also, you know, to get to that level, I'm sure you've seen it as well, where if they don't get the goal, for example, or they don't quite achieve the result they want, it must be so hard not to actually literally feel kind of down, or I don't know if the depressed is the right word, but it probably is, for a period of time, because they put their life and soul and sacrifice so much to get there. And then it's kind of like, it must be hard to get them to put things into perspective. It's like, hang on a minute. You're like literally the 0.01% in the world. You know what I mean? So to win every time is not really necessarily gonna happen, right? But it must be hard for them to see that, right? Because they put so much into it.
Yeah, it's you know, and it's not that it's unhealthy, but I mean, it's to such a level where, you know, they do learn how to work through it. But yeah, they put so much into it. I don't know that most of us can understand the disappointment if they don't, you know, achieve the level that they wanted to achieve. You know, they usually bounce back and have a mental resiliency, and some athletes don't, you know, some athletes can't get over that. But yeah, when we're talking about some of the best athletes in the world, right, that are trying to achieve things like world champions and the things we've talked about, those things come, they're few and far between, and they're super hard to achieve. So, you know, they've set the bar really, really high, which could set you up to be disappointed a little bit.
100%. How do you help them? I'm just curious to know, because I know you mentioned something in one of your posts, Brian, about coaching versus teaching, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you're not just coaching, you're teaching. So you don't just show them, you tell them reasons why, right?
That's right.
I always think that, especially, you know, when you're coaching people like athletes, even if it's, you know, amateur level athletes, it doesn't matter. And I even find myself doing this with clients. I want them to understand why they're doing it,
right?
Always, as much as I can. I think it's really important people have that understanding. Okay, this makes sense now. I'm doing it for this reason. Okay, great. I've got that clarity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've always thought it was very important to explain, and maybe it's the generation of athletes that we have now. They'll ask questions. They want to know why you're doing what you're doing. They want to be able to, you know, there's so much information out there right now that, you know, they've been on the internet. They've listened to podcasts. They've done research. They kind of know, you know, with their teammates, what they're doing. So you can't just roll in and do whatever, you know, you'd be exposed. And so I think being able to justify and explain and teach to the athlete what you're doing gives them more confidence in what they've signed up for. You know, even with our young athletes, we try to, you know, give them some context around, you know, why do I want to be dorsiflexed in my foot when I strike the ground? Well, and then you give them the reasons behind that. And now they're more conscious of their movement and probably are going to hit those positions better, which again, you don't have to do that, but I think it's going to help move the needle, you know, more. And that helps you be more successful as a coach. And I think having been a teacher and been around teachers my whole life and coaches, you know, there's just that parallel of, you know, coaches aren't people that stand on a sideline, blow a whistle and yell at people. I mean, there are those coaches out there, but the good coaches dive in, they teach, they mentor, they care for, you know, and it's like the complete package.
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly what it is. Obviously, what is it? People don't care about how much you know unless you know how much you care. That's very important. And I mean, actually got to care about your client first and foremost. But also, as you say, it's mentoring. That's exactly what it is, because you're helping people change the way they think about things. And I think I don't know if you can relate to this, Brian, but it's one of those, because it is different when you're coaching gem pop versus athletes, of course. But it's the same sort of thing in terms of just basically embracing the struggle of the process and understanding that you're never going to get to a point where you're like, okay, great, I'm finished now. It's never-ending improvement, right? Because you achieve one thing with your training. You might even achieve a PB in the gym, or it might be getting to an aesthetic goal, and then you get there, and it's the typical cliche thing of, okay, what's next? And if you don't have that mindset where it's like, okay, it's going to be never-ending, I'm going to always be leveling up and have something essentially that I suck at, right?
Oh, yeah. And you know what? For a high-achieving athlete, that's okay. I think we're okay with that a little bit, you know, where it is always, you know, what can I do a little bit better? How can I be a little healthier? How can I, you know, I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily, especially for somebody trying to achieve. And yeah, there is a loss of perspective at some point for those elite athletes, you know, where some of these kids are just trying to make the JV basketball team, you know? So there's variations of it. Yeah, those elite ones are, they're different. They're built different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt, man. No doubt. They just, that's it. The people out there built different. They've been again, conditioned from a young age, right? That's the thing. For the most part, they've been really getting after it from a young age. And they just kind of like, as you say, they're just built different. They're built different. They have something in their genetics as well, of course, but just that work ethic is through the roof, right?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, it's like nature or nurture, you know, were they born that way or have they worked hard enough and have goals to have been, you know, formulated that way? And I'm not sure if I know the answer to that. I do know that I've worked with enough athletes over the years that some kids get it, some kids don't. And they might all show up for training, but you know, the three or four that really want to get better, get a lot better, just because of their, you know, their DNA, how they're wired.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. But that's the thing. I think the people just need to understand, right, that there's always going to be something you suck at, right? There's always going to be something that you need to improve on in the gym if you want to continue to level up, right, with your physique or your performance. Yep. Or a bit of both.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, well, that's the thing. I mean, even working with some of the elite athletes in the world, there's always something to improve upon, you know? And so having that mindset of, you know, not getting complacent and finding the things that you do need to work on, that's what separates the you know, the great from the greatest. Honestly, you know, everybody can do X, Y, and Z, but are you willing to go beyond that and find the little things that are going to, you know, push the envelope to greatness?
I love that. It's the attention to detail. It's that extra 1%. I think as James Clear mentions that, didn't he, in Atomic Habits, like an extra 1%. Yep. But
that's right.
They are. I wanted to ask you that as well, in terms of all the athletes you've coached, and you just mentioned, yeah, then what separates, you know, good from great.
Yeah.
What is it you see the difference? Is it just they go the extra mile? They, like, what is it? What's that kind of like at that level, or even just athletes in general or people in general, to get to that level? Like, what would you say? I know this is different with everyone. It's kind of a broad question, but what would you say that gets them to be great? Like, what are the main attributes?
Yeah. I what I would say is discipline. If I had to put one thing on it, what separates them, it'd be discipline. And that's discipline in their whole life. You know, discipline when they come in to train, discipline of how they recover and how they treat their bodies and what they eat and how they sleep and the supplementation and, you know, just the way they go about their lives is very disciplined. I mean, I can have a room full of 5 or 6 athletes and they can all do the workout and everybody could check the box that they did every set, every rep, every, you know, thing I asked them to do. That elite great athlete did it better. They did everything we asked them to do just a little bit better. With full discipline, they completed every rep. They did it perfectly. If they didn't do it perfectly, they go back and do it again. And I kind of continue to see that time and time again out of some of my top elite athletes, where it never gets, it's always a breath of fresh air to watch them train and watch them prepare for training, because it is no nonsense. You know, I'm doing exactly everything the way you tell me to do it, which, you know, as a coach puts you a little bit on watch to make sure that you're completely organized, have everything laid out in a perfect fashion, and that it's going to be a quality session for the athlete, because that's what their expectation is out of themselves. And, you know, I'm not sure that I saw a lot of that early on in my career. I worked with a bunch of great high school kids and we achieved, you know, had some success. But man, when you see some of these athletes that are considered to be the best in their sport in the world, there is just another level of dedication and discipline to their, you know, what the task at hand is.
100%. I think that is just relative to everyone, right? I always say that is the foundation. I think Jocko Willing says something about discipline equals freedom or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's like that discipline is always going to be the foundation which kind of plugs into everything else, right?
Yeah. I mean, and I feel like, you know, there's so many athletes that have a lot of potential, right? And with the right level of discipline and dedication could get there. And I think sometimes you just have to look in the mirror and go, you know, can I do that? And, you know, we talk to athletes about that a lot. And a lot of them that are very talented don't have that level of discipline to take it to the next level. So it's our job to show them what that looks like. You know, and be able to reference these quality athletes that know how to train and recover and, you know, approach life basically. And then it's, but it is ultimately up to them, you know, if they can handle that, that level of discipline, because it's not easy. I mean, I think you, you and I would both say that, you know, more people fail in that regard than have success.
100%. Yeah. Cause I was like decent at football, soccer, you guys call it over there. And yeah. I was decent at rugby. I wasn't great, but I was decent. And I think if I'd have been more disciplined though, then I probably would have been a lot better. I don't think I would have been a top level or anything like that, but I would have been a hell of a lot better. And it's like, it's hard when you're younger, right? It's like, cause you don't really understand the importance of that kind of stuff. Right. So it's good that you're coaching them through all that and you're making them aware of that straight off the bat, because that is, was it, you know, is it, is, what is it? Again, the cliche saying, hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard or something like that. Right. How it must be frustrating for you though, Brian. You must have seen so much wasted talent though, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we definitely see that a lot. I think, you know, I mean, I was a guy that grew up with a dad who I had every amenity, you know, I had everything at the fingertips, and I didn't always take advantage of all of it. It's almost like it was too close to home for me. And I, you know, there's some regret in that, you know, where could I have been, or what could I have done? I mean, it led me to coaching, which I've been able to impact, you know, hopefully hundreds, thousands of lives, whatever, which I count as a full, you know, that was God's plan all along. But, you know, it always makes you wonder, you know, had I just done a little bit more of what my coach asked me or my dad asked me, you know, where could I have landed? So, yeah, we see kids come up short all the time. I see professional athletes come up a little short because they're just not as disciplined. It's a lot more prominent than you'd think. There's some really talented humans out there that even with a lack of discipline still, you know, reach greatness in their sport.
It's the same sort of principles, right? It's like, you know, you're going to be outworked most likely if you don't, you know, put enough work in and discipline, like that kind of the talent or whatever, or that those skills you're gifted with only go so far, right, Bright?
Yeah, that's right. I think training and sport obviously sets you up for success. And I think that's why a lot of businesses and companies love to hire an athlete or, you know, somebody that's been in that space where they've developed a level of discipline. They've had to, you know, answer the call when they're not feeling great, or they have to, you know, power through a tough day. Cause I think that's what athletes do, you know, day to day. So, definitely, you know, it's a life lesson, you know, training every day is almost a life lesson. Developing those habits, you know, can be life for your whole life.
Awesome, man. Yeah. And speaking of life lessons, Bright, how much would you say has benefited you being a coach for almost 3 decades, the wisdom you've acquired, like you say, the lives you've changed, how much do you think that's impacted your life and others around you?
Oh man. It's impacted me greatly. I mean, I often reflect back on, you know, the number of families and kids that I've gotten to, you know, interact with and just do life with. And it's been a total blessing, you know, for me. I think it's helped me grow in, as a coach and in my profession. You know, like I said, I almost have to apologize to those poor kids that I coached, you know, 27 years ago when I was still learning, you know, how to do this stuff. But all those things have then culminated in, you know, all the athletes that I got to work with and the successes that we've had and some of the failures. And then also just a whole bunch of, you know, new coaches now that I'm getting to speak into and bring along, you know, a whole new generation of younger coaches and stuff in our company. And, you know, it just, the tree kind of continues to grow, I suppose, if you will.
It's incredible, man. Absolutely incredible. No, I'm the same. I'm with you on that as well. I got to apologize. When I first started, I was a personal trainer when I was like 20 and early 20s, you know, some of the advice I was given was kind of hit and miss, you know what I mean? But like, right. Unfortunately, no matter how many qualifications you've got, you know what I'm saying? You need practice on the field, don't you? You know, that's how it goes, just like an athlete.
That's exactly right. I know, like, you know, certifications are necessary and the information, you know, you can take and utilize, but there's just nothing like cutting your teeth on, you know, actually working with athletes and failing a little bit. You know, I think we learn more from our failures than our successes. And, you know, we live in an industry where, you know, Christian McCaffrey, Anna Hall, Janine Becky, Jay Howell, you name the athlete, they make me look pretty good, right? They're phenomenal athletes. Or just like even in Gen Pop, if you have somebody who's blessed with great genetics, it makes you look like a phenomenal trainer because they have all kinds of success. And so, you know, sometimes it's a little bit of luck of having, you know, having the great athletes around you, you know, to help. But then you still have to be able to answer the call to be able to serve those athletes and continue to push, you know, push the bar up a little higher for them. And that's where, you know, there's nothing that can prepare you for that other than, you know, jumping in the deep end and, you know, treading your butt off.
And this, again, these are all like kind of cliche things. Everyone knows these things, right? But people, you know, we all do it, right? When we get into that fear of failure and we actually fail at something, sometimes our emotions get the better of us. And we're like, we almost go into that victim mentality of, oh, you know, why me or whatever.
Sure.
But deep down, you kind of know it's happening for you and it's making you better in whatever you're doing, whether that's an entrepreneur, whether that's a coach or in your professional life. You know those challenges, all of those challenges is an opportunity for growth, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, that's where you want to live a little bit. You know, you want to live in the weeds and, you know, not have, if you just had success all the time, I'm not really sure where you'd grow. And so, you know, I'm going to be 51 years old next week and I'm still growing. I'm still trying to learn, you know, studying new stuff that can help athletes get better. And I think the minute you stop doing that, you know, you're kind of dead in the water.
No, but I was just going to say, in terms of a couple of quick questions is, the first one is you said something then about you're 51 next week.
Yeah.
And I'm 36 now. And I heard something on a podcast yesterday. It really stood out to me. And it was like, we all think in our heads, like at my age, I feel like at the age of 51, I'm going to be pretty much the same. Like in my head, I'm like, oh, not much is going to change in terms of who I am. But then I look back at how different I am in terms of when I was even 20.
Yeah.
And it's a different person. It's a different version, like 10 different versions.
Sure.
How much would you say, what do you think is, and it's kind of a deep question, but how much would you say you've changed, Bri, since, let's say you were 36 to 51 next week? Like,
sure.
How much have you changed and in what way? I know it's a big question.
Yeah, it is a big question. I mean, what I would say is I would probably liken it to kind of like a cell phone upgrade. I mean, I'm still a cell phone, you know, like I still have all my basic components of what kind of, you know, my beliefs and my hardwiring is still the same. I feel like there's been a lot of probably upgrades, you know, in wisdom, in maturity, in, you know, how I operate and things like that, which, you know, going from the iPhone 9 to the iPhone 15, you know, over the last 20 years, obviously that's a much better product. It works better. It does more things. It's more, you know, all that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's a great analogy or not, but that's kind of what I'm thinking is, Brian Kula, the coach, is still the same Brian Kula that I was when I was 23 years old. I love kids. I love sports. I'm hungry for knowledge. You know, all the things that I've always been, that hasn't changed a bit. But, you know, I've learned a lot and I've made a lot of mistakes and I've gone through a lot of life lessons and I've had tragedies and successes. And, you know, I think all that goes into formulating who you are now. And so here I am now, you know, and I'm not, you know, grandpa at age 85, who's had a whole life of experiences, but I've been through a lot and I was a head coach for a long time. And, you know, now I've started and run my own company. And so I think you just learn all those things and you become a better version, you know, of who you were.
Love it, man. Love it. And just to finish off for the listeners, what would you say to the average person, just to kind of wrap this up, what are the main fundamentals they should focus on? Like the big rocks, you know, whether nutrition, strength training, sleep, like what would you say the big rocks they should really pay attention to just so they can get rid of all that bullshit that doesn't matter that you see online?
Sure.
I have to keep reinforcing this to them.
There's so many things to focus on nowadays, right? With all the stuff that, you know, in the industry, I think the number one thing to focus on is consistency. I really truly believe that sometimes, you know, what we do isn't as important as the consistency of doing it. And so, you know, I think the weight room, as a general population, you know, strength training is very important because I think it gives longevity. I think it moves the needle for performance and aesthetics and all the things that people are after. So I think lifting weights and, you know, getting away from all of the cardio and just, you know, like on a hamster wheel all the time that maybe we fell into, you know, the last 25, 30 years or whatever. So, you know, consistency, strength training, and then just, you know, understanding that more isn't always better. Sometimes the body needs rest and recovery, which is, I think, something that we try to stand on as one of our core principles. Could be something that the general population, you know, could take into account. They'll see better benefit and more successes by taking a little time off.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's key, isn't it? Recovery. People overlook that part, man.
Yep, get your sleep. You know, make sure you're not training, you know, 15 days in a row and, you know, overdoing it, thinking that you're making up lost time. Just stay consistent and then give your body the appropriate rest. Adaptation will happen a lot faster.
Stay consistent and give your body the appropriate rest. Love that, my man. Hey, look, Bri, where can the audience find you? Anything you want to share here for the audience? Go ahead, my man. I'll put everything in the show notes anyway.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, we got our website at KSP.com. And then, you know, our Instagram at Kula Sports Performance. We have a couple different channels there that you can tap in, and we try to post frequently. So keep everybody there. If we can help anyone out there, we got our KSP Global digital coaching platform that just launched about a week ago. And I think that's going to be a next great move for us to be able to help more athletes around the world.
Incredible, man. Thank you for your time, Bri. It was really, really good to talk to you, man. I really, really enjoyed that.
Appreciate you. Sorry we had some issues, but it was a pleasure, and maybe we could do this again another time.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. I'd love to make up for the technical glitches, but I think we managed it, my man. I think we did a good job there. We started that out really well.